Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Greetings to all of you listening around the world, and a warm welcome as we bring you another edition of the Answers for the Family radio show. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and if you're a regular listener, thank you for joining us once again. And if this is your first time, please make yourself at home as we bring you Answers for the Family. Each week, this show will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more. Now, having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields and skilled authors who are all working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, our topic today is so fitting. It's discover your unique parenting skills. Now, to discuss this, our guest, Mercedes Samudio, works with families and children to help them develop healthy communication skills, manage severe emotional issues, develop coping skills to manage behaviors, create dynamic parent-child bonds, and navigate social media and technology as a family, which is unique in itself. Throughout the course of her career, Mercedes has worked with adoptive families, foster families, teen parents, parents navigating the child protective services system, and children living with mental illness. In 2014, she began to transition into private practice, where she focuses on parent coaching, where she supports parents as they discover and unlock their unique parenting powers. She truly believes that when parents feel empowered, they can be great guides for raising healthy and happy children. Mercedes holds a Master's of Social Work, a Bachelor's of Psychology with emphasis on child development, and is certified as a Nonviolent Child Raising and Attachment Parenting Educator. Mercedes, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you so much for having me. How are you this morning?
I'm doing great this morning. It's already been wonderful. I've been up early. I've been out amongst the trees walking the dogs, and it's another beautiful day in Southern California.
Yes, it is.
So what I'd love to start with, and it's that scenario that I think we've all heard, you know, at least from a parent or two, and that's where they start out by saying, I have a great kid, but they're acting out in a negative way. I wish they came with a manual so I'd know exactly what to do when they're avoiding homework or having meltdowns, or sometimes much worse. What do you say to that parent?
I say to that parent something that it's sometimes not as apparent as we all think, but it is, you've already got the manual. It's already inside of your head as well as your heart. And that's what I mean by, you know, parents having their own unique parenting powers.
Well, why so much today? Why do parents today need to feel empowered in their roles as parents? And is it something that has changed, that we need it so much more now than maybe 20 years ago?
You know, that's a great question. And I think, no, I don't think it's changed at all. I think one of the main reasons why parents need to feel so empowered is because it's one of the only jobs that we're tasked with as humans that has absolutely no training and no consistent support, right? So
yeah.
We're saying, yeah, right? It's like all these other jobs. You become a NASA engineer, you become, you know, an automobile creator, and you get all this training and a manual for it. However, when you are tasked with raising a human and creating a human that is going to be a productive and active participant in society, you get no help and no training on that. So it's really important that we turn our attention to empowering parents and helping parents to feel like they're supported in this task of creating and raising humans.
Yeah. You know, that's interesting, because when you bring it up in regards to a manual, that in this day and age, you know, I have a manual for my company for new hires. You know, McDonald's has a manual for going in and learning how to make hamburgers and how to serve the clients.
Right.
But yet as something that is the most important thing that any of us are going to do, which is raising a child, there's no manual.
No, not at all. And you know, I'll say this, there are manuals. There are a plethora of books. You go to any bookstore, you type in Amazon parenting, there are a plethora of books and manuals, so to speak. But what I really like to help parents learn how to do is to kind of curate, if you will, all of that information that we have at our fingertips, thanks to the internet. We have so much information, but sometimes what I notice is that it can be information overload for parents. You know, they have all this information. You type in any issue you're dealing with on Google, and yeah, you'll get the results, you'll get the pages and things, but you don't have the support or the skill set to maybe execute some of those things. So that's why one of my favorite things to do is to help families really cull and curate all this information that they have at their fingertips, so that way it's unique to their parenting style and their family's needs.
And that's great, because you mentioned the internet, and I noticed, I mean, you know, when I was learning more about you, that one of the things that you teach families is how to navigate social media and technology as a family. And I think that is huge, because in this day and age, you know, when we talk with families, and we in some cases go in and you know, and as we're picking them up to take them off to a program, but what we learn as we gather information is that, you know, they're sitting at the dinner table and each child is texting their friends. Nobody's communicating amongst themselves, and as a family, they don't seem to know how to utilize that technology that, as you're saying, can be so incredibly valuable to them.
And, you know, if we can be honest, the parents are also using, you know, the technology for their work as well. And I think that that's something that in our day and age has become so commonplace. You know, we use the internet for work quite a bit. You can get your emails, you can send documents. So the kids are using it more for entertainment and social, and the parents are using it more for business and getting, you know, things along in their life. So I think the whole family needs to really establish, what does it mean to be connected and plugged in our family? Is there a certain time when we're just all going to have the devices off? Is there a certain area in the house where we use the devices? You know, if we have Wi-Fi, is there a certain time when someone's going to go to the router and turn it off and say, hey, we're not going to use it? And that's really what I help families do. Not so much guilt or shame each other for using it, but to really recognize that we live in a time where pretty much everyone has some sort of device and can be connected at any time. So how are we going to cultivate connection in our family, and how are we going to model how to connect with each other without being plugged into our devices all the time?
Yeah, you know, one of the visions that I had as you were saying that, and as I was reading it in the introduction, was the situation to where, you know, in this day and age, as families, we don't get the same opportunities as much as we might have years ago for the family to go camping for the weekend, or to, you know, to go to the museum for the weekend, or to go do something like that. And it sounds like one of the things that we can do is you can go to that museum. In fact, you can go to the museum in Italy if you're in California as a family for the weekend. But you do it online. But if you do it as a family, now it's one of those bonding areas that just makes perfect sense. So that's one of the things that I saw as I was learning more about you, that I thought, this is really unique. And I love the fact that we're taking all of the resources that are out there and trying to come up with ways as to how can this better the overall family bonding process.
Yes, and I think that that's something that, again, really not demonizing or stigmatizing the technology that we have now. You know, I talk to parents a lot about not stigmatizing the video game systems they have in their house, but to actually play with their kids. So when their kids are playing a video game, sit down and say, hey, let's play together. There are all types of games that you can buy as a family where you guys can actually enjoy each other, still, again, being connected, but still joining in and learning about each other. Same thing with, you know, like you were talking about with the internet. You can always go online and watch videos together and go on trips together, do all of these virtual ways, and still take that time to say, even though we're plugged in and we're connected, we're doing it as a family. We're learning and growing as a family.
Yeah, I was thinking about a particular parent that I was working with, from the standpoint that we had taken their child to a specialized program, and right before the child was coming back, I had met with the family, and we were talking about sort of the preparation that they needed to have before the child came back. And and one of the things that the father complained about was, he said that when he was at home, all he did was play this baseball video game. And so the first thing that I said was, well, first of all, be glad that it's a baseball video game, because there's potentially a whole bunch of other things out there that that he could be doing online. But the second thing was I told the father, I said, go buy it. And, you know, your son's going to be here in whatever it was, a week or 10 days or so, and start playing it every day so that when he gets here, you can play it with him and not and not be in a situation to where you don't know what's going on, or he gets frustrated with you because you don't get it. So take the time that you need to learn what it is that you already know is making him happy.
Right. You're so right. And, you know, if I can go back to this idea of empowering parents and finding your own unique way of parenting, what you just talked about is something that I really help parents to learn, which is to shift your mindset of just doing what is prescribed for you to do in your parenting role. There are people who might say, don't, you know, be your kid's friend or don't do X with your kid and these things. But what I really cultivate in families and what I really love to give parents is this ability to say, I know what works in my family. And it might not work for everybody else, but for me, this works really healthily. I'm able to play video games with my kids and still they respect me as their parent. I'm able to, you know, really infuse myself into their lives in a way that doesn't always look like the traditional parenting role or doesn't always have to be A, B, C, D, what I'm supposed to be doing as a parent. So I really like to empower parents to do exactly what you shared with that dad, which is, hey, if this works in connecting with your kid, then do it. You know, it might feel like a barrier at first, but if you're like, this is how my kid connects through playing this video game and enjoying themselves, well, let me come to them and connect with them on that level. And that's okay. That's just as well as taking it away from them and making them talk to you or taking them out of the house. You can do both, and it can be a hybrid of how you connect with your family.
Yeah. You know, I was just thinking, when I was at the gym a couple of days ago and I was going over your information, and I do this while I'm pedaling, and many of the people at the gym know what I do. So they come up and go, okay, who's the guest this week? Or what's the topic this week? And so, I said, you know, we're going to be talking about parenting skills, you know, and so, you know, and the person I'm going to have is a parenting coach. And they proceeded to, and I got questions from the standpoint of not even questions. They were more like comments where they're saying, oh, well, they do this then. Oh, well, they do that, right? Oh, do they do this? And what I realized was is that there's a lot of perception out there as to what a parenting coach is and what it isn't. So why don't you share with us some of the things that it really is and some of the things sometimes that people expect it to be and it really isn't.
Okay, that's a great question, actually, and I think because it's such an emerging role and an emerging title that, yes, there's a lot of speculation about what does a parent coach actually do. So the way that I describe parent coaching is it's a style of helping parents feel really supported in their role as they're raising children. So what I like to do is take a collaborative approach where I'm not the expert, so to speak, you are. You're the expert of your family, and I'm coming in to really literally coach you on how to be more effective in your communication, be more effective in your connection with your family, and to overall feel confident in what you're doing. My task isn't to tell you what you're doing wrong. My task is to see where some of the barriers may be or some of the hangups may be and helping you to enhance that so that way you can see it too and give you the tools so you can deal with it without me having to be there. So I think sometimes people expect me to come in and tell them what to do, you know, and some of the times I've had families say, just tell me what I'm supposed to do. And, you know, I say that's part of what I'll be doing with you, but another part of it is to really empower you to see an issue in your family and to say, hey, I have a tool for that. I know how to help my kid do that. You know, things come up all the time, and I always share with people that what you do with me is setting the foundation. So when other things come up that maybe we didn't address specifically or directly in our sessions, you're like, no, Mercedes gave me a tool for a meltdown. Even though she's not here to help me, I know what to do. I have a set of skills now to go to my kid and work with them. Or the teacher called again. I now know what to do as opposed to before I worked with Mercedes. Now I know how to deal with the school and how to get my kid the services they need. And things like that. And that all comes from this perspective of it's really important for you to feel empowered in your skill set. And you can't feel empowered in your skill set unless you know what you do well and you have the tools to manage the things that maybe you don't do so well.
Yeah, and that is one of the things that I love from the standpoint of in so many different walks of life. If we look at things from the standpoint that our job is to empower the other people to do what works for them versus trying to make people dependent on us, because the reality is we're not going to be there 24/7. You know, you're not going to be there if you're starting and the child is relatively young. You're not going to be there for the next 14 years.
No.
You know, so yes, I think in so many parts of life, that concept of how can we empower them to, you know, empower all of us. And it's, you know, it's not just them, but I mean, it's empower me or empower whoever it is that's in that situation and with those children. So I just think that has such an incredible benefit all the way down the line, because these are things that are now taken on to the next generation. If you've empowered this family and they've done a good job and they raise their kids and they empower their kids, now we're making a positive difference on a much bigger scale. So thank you for that.
Yeah, thank you.
Now, and I know that you coined the phrase parenting powers. You talked a little bit about it, but share a little bit more about your particular definition.
Sure. So before I go into like exactly the definition of parenting powers, I'll share that I am a self-proclaimed nerd. So I love superheroes. I love Batman. I love the Marvel movies, you know. And when I look at those characters, I look at how empowered they feel when they go out there and they can help others. They have the arc reactor. They have the kung fu skills, but they can go out there and really help people live better lives as a result of their, you know, their superhero powers. And so when I was thinking of ways to empower parents and what I really wanted my message to be, I wanted it to come from that idea that each of us has our own internal powers. It doesn't have to be from a radioactive spider or, you know, from an arc reactor technology. It can just be from our own experiences and who we are as people. And so I really wanted to incorporate that into my work, which is helping parents find their own unique powers. What is it about their personality, their experience, their expertise, their knowledge that can really benefit them in their role raising another human being, right? So
I think the important question is that once they pick their superpower, do you give them a cape?
they can pick their own cape, you know, or their own costume. You know, and one of the things that I think is this. No one is just a parent, right? Once you become a parent, that's not the only role you play. You know, you're a mom or you are a sister or you're a brother or you are, you know, a radio, you know, show host or you're all these different things. And I think that when you learn your parenting powers, you can actually pull from all of that. You can pull from all the things that you actually do in your life. And that can really enhance, again, that role of how do I help another human being become healthy? Well, let me use everything I have. It's not just my role as a parent where I'm getting all these skills from or this knowledge from. I also know things outside of my role as a parent. And again, I think that goes to that bigger cultural shift that you were talking about just a minute ago, and it's something that I want to do in this world, which is not to just make a parent once they have a child, not to just dismiss all of the experience and life they've had before they became parents, but to really let that be part of who they are now as parents. It doesn't go away. It becomes really a huge part of who they are and how they help their families to develop and grow into healthy families and to healthy adults.
Yeah, when you were mentioning about the superheroes, I was watching something on television last night, and Ben Affleck was talking about his 4-year-old just had a birthday, and he asked what he wanted, and he said, "Well, I want a superhero birthday party, and I want you as Batman."
Right.
And so he said he had to contact the studio and had to sign a bunch of releases, but they actually gave him the costume, the same costume that he was wearing in the movie. But he said that some of the other superheroes that they ordered, you know, to come to their party were a little bit upset because they didn't have costumes quite up to speed like the one that he had.
right. And I think when you talk about that, you know, I think all parents feel that way. That's very resonant, where thanks to the internet, thanks to Facebook and Instagram, it's very easy to look at other parents and think, maybe I'm not up to snuff. You know, I'm not doing it as well as that parent is, or I didn't Pinterest my kid's party the way that parent did. And I think, you know, going back to really helping parents feel empowered is to know that whatever you're doing in your family, is enough. You don't have to be like Alan. You don't have to be like Mercedes. You don't have to be like Ben Affleck or any of these other celebrities. As long as you and your family are connected and you're loving your family and you're nurturing your family and you're doing everything that you have at your disposal to keep your family alive and afloat, that's enough. It doesn't matter if your cape is brand new, shiny from Warner Brothers Studios, or if it's a cape that you've been working on yourself in your own basement. It means something, and that's who you are, and that's where your uniqueness and your empowerment should come from, how amazing you are, as opposed to looking at someone else's suit, so to speak, and feeling like maybe it's not enough.
Yep, and I know that we as parents have to deal with that from the standpoint of our kids coming back. If we give them a curfew or we give them something, mm-hmm. and then they always come back. If you say you need to be back by 10, and they go, but Johnny can be out till 11, you know, and right. there's constantly that trying to compare or trying to use one to play it against the other, and you're right. None of that yeah. needs to matter because, as you're saying, be your own unique parent, and in doing yeah. so, You're the expert as it relates to your family.
Right. Right. And you know, if I can comment on that idea Please. Of what happens when my kids grow up and now there's other influence, right? They have other friends that they are interacting with, and those friends have family members, and of course kids talk about what they're allowed to do versus what the other person is allowed to do. And I think one of the things that I always share with parents is when you begin to set limits, when you begin to set rules and disciplinary strategies, to always make it a conversation. It's not a one-sided thing where I'm the parent, you're the kid, do as I say. But what you're really trying to do in those moments is cultivate a sense of character and values in your child. And that's why a lot of my parents set the limits that they set. So I always talk to my parents about when you set a limit about curfew, bedtimes, the friends that you have, the types of movies you watch and things like that, to really sit down with your kid and explain why 10 o'clock is our family's curfew. You know, what am I trying to instill in you? What do I want you to begin to understand about being home at a certain time that's important to your development of character and your value set? And when you have that perspective on your limits, it's not just about some arbitrary limit you're setting, but it's really about knowing your kid, connecting with your kid, and helping them develop values and character, that actually resonates more with children, because then they say, okay, this is who we are as a family. This is why this is happening. It's not a punishment, or it's not because my mom hates me, but it's because as a family, we have cultivated these values. We have, you know, come up with these ideas and rituals that make sense for me when I grow up, and that makes sense for me when I'm making decisions away from my parents. So I think when you take that perspective, it helps kids to understand what limits are set and why they're set. It doesn't mean they'll always agree. It doesn't mean that they'll always enjoy them, but it gives them a foundation to understand where you're coming from, so you guys can have that dialogue a little bit more openly and fluidly.
Yeah, and in speaking along the lines of values, and we have a question. Again, this is an email that's come in. This came in last night. So the nice part is that it means that people are out there. They're either receiving the press release or they're receiving information about the show. In many cases, it means that they can't listen live. Or they can't call in. They're in a situation to where they don't believe either they're at work or something, and that they don't believe right. they can call in. So they send in various questions, and this one really touches right on that area of values. It says, I have 7 grandchildren, and looking back, I truly wish I had the resources such as those you are providing to families. It says, you know, back when I was raising my 3 children. Times are so different now. I am lost with this new generation, as my grandchildren seem to have less value for the family history and or elders. How would you address this issue?
I think that's a really healthy issue, and I love that question. So thank you to the viewer or the listener who sent it in. One of the things that I love about teaching our children culture is that they can also teach us too. And I have this conversation with colleagues who are older than me as well, who mentor me, and we talk a lot about how things have changed in the helping profession and values have changed. But one of the things that I always share with grandparents and people who are in the family who are kind of the older generation is really understanding that as we move through generations, values do change. It doesn't mean that you've done anything wrong in your generation or this generation is currently doing something wrong. It just means that social consciousness changes, the way that we understand our world changes, and that's positive. So what I would share with her and with any other person who's listening to this is sit down with your grandkids or the younger, you know, generation in your family and say, hey, I want to share with you how we did X back in, you know, my day, and you share with me how you guys do it now. And to really have that merging, that bridge where it's not just about the values from my time being the ones that matter and hold more value or more weight, but it's about really merging and saying, wow, when I was growing up, cell phones were not the way to connect, but now you guys connect that way. So let's talk about how communication has changed over time, or let's talk about the fact that if, you know, you lived in another state, you probably didn't get to see your grandkids until you came to visit, but now, thanks to technology, we can do Skype or we can do FaceTime together. So to really begin to merge these ideas and not see it as a decrease in value or a dismissal of value because the new generation has changed so much, but to really begin to bridge that gap of what happens over time and to listen to your grandkids as they talk about how they process and interact with their world, and then you share with them how in your time you process and interacted with your world. And if we're being honest, overall, a lot of things have stayed the same. A lot of things are a lot more similar than we think they are. But when we close that gap by saying, oh, kids today are so this, or, oh, you know, parents today don't know this, we really close that gap and we really put up that wall where we're not open to figuring out how things are actually more similar than we think.
Yeah, I know that. Yeah, when you mentioned earlier in regards to technology, you know, I think it's such a huge thing as you do with people from the standpoint of having them learn it as a family so that they all understand it. Because the worst situation you can have is either with this as a grandparent or as a parent that has no idea how your child is learning how to communicate. And mm-hmm. if that's the only way that they are communicating, you're putting yourself in a position to be outside of the realm of what they understand as they understand communication. So, you know, I just completely agree with what you're saying. You know, take the time, compare the differences, but take the time to learn the things that you need to know now, because mm-hmm. that is the way that they're going to communicate. So leaving yourself out of it is a choice that you're making, not one that they're putting on you.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
So now what are some other things that in regards to how parents can, you know, and it's so many people use different terms. I'll get parents that'll say, well, you know, how can I manage their, you know, the children's behavior, or, you know, how can I guide their behavior? And there's a lot of different words, and I know it's all kind of a broad area, but what are some of the techniques that parents can do if their child is already starting to act out, to try to rein them back in? And again, whatever term it may be, guide, manage, or whatever, but help with the behaviors and the direction that the kids are going.
Yeah, I think that's a really healthy question. And it is the majority of the things that I deal with in my work. So, I'm not one for, I'm not a stickler for language. However my families have perceived their issues in the family, I allow that to be their experience. You know, so if a parent calls it a tantrum, if they call it a this or a that, I'm totally okay with that language, because I think that language is so huge in how we experience and live our lives. So, you know, again, I don't mince words with families when they say it's this or it's that. But one thing that I do share with them is that no matter what's going on in your family, whether it is really intense behaviors that have gone on for so long and everyone's just really frustrated, or it's something new that's emerging and you want to kind of head it off before it gets to that level, I always bring parents back to the relationship that you have with your child. And the reason why I bring them back to that is because having a healthy relationship with your children, it becomes the foundation, kind of that floor of everything else that you throw in there, whether it be behavior, whether it be limits, whether it be skills, life lessons. We talked a little bit about values and character. All those things are going to be able to spring off from that foundation of a relationship with your child. And what I look at when I'm talking about relationship is, how do you connect with your child? How do they know you're connecting with them? How do they connect with you? And how do you know that they're connecting with you? If you are disconnected from your child and your child is disconnected from you, I can guarantee those power struggles will feel so much more intense, because neither of you are connecting or talking to each other or communicating with each other. You're pretty much communicating kind of, you're missing each other. You are constantly on one side of the room and the kids on the other side of the room. And I'm talking about that metaphorically. You guys are kind of yelling and screaming and missing each other so much that something as simple as asking you to put your clothes in the right dirty clothes hamper can feel like World War III. something as simple as saying, hey, take the trash out, it can feel like you've just started, you know, a whole, you know, you just set up a nuclear bomb in your family because there's no connection, there's no relationship there.
Yeah, and I know that you talk on your site and in your speaking engagements, and you talk about, you know, that connection between relationship and discipline. Share mm-hmm. a little bit how you can establish discipline at a level kind of consistent with the level of relationship that you have established. So mm-hmm. I see that as sort of a balancing situation,
yes,
where you can do one, but only if you've already established the other. So
yes,
share a little bit more on that.
Yeah, so it's interesting because one of the things that I tell a family again is that a relationship is a journey, it's not a destination, right? You're constantly tweaking, and you know the relationship wands and ebbs and flows like everything else in the relationship. So one of the tools that I always share with parents about the relationship with their kid is to bring awareness to it. And the kid too, for the kid to bring awareness to it. But there are going to be times when you and your kid are going to connect, it's going to work, and you're like, yes, this is working. And then for some odd reason, whatever it may be, you know, they didn't get what they wanted, or everyone's tired, or everyone's hungry, that relationship might kind of switch up a little bit. And what I always ask parents to do is not beat yourself up in that moment because of some switch or some minor thing that's happened, but to just bring awareness to the fact that we were doing really good, and then maybe something happened to run that relationship or to create a break in our trust, just to be aware, okay, maybe something happened, and to not beat yourself up or your kid up and kind of further that rupture, but to say, okay, maybe something happened, let me take a step back, let me figure out how to work that out. So what I'll do is I'll take it outside of the context of parenting, and I'll take it into the context of our workforce and how we live every day. So when we have a great relationship with our boss, right, our supervisor, whoever's over us, we tend to get our work done a lot more efficiently, and you're not as annoyed when they come in and say, hey, I know you're doing this, but can you get this done as well? You know, there's some, you know, like, oh, man, another thing, but because you like your boss and you generally agree with their values and what they're doing for the company, you go along with it. However, on the flip side, then you really don't like your boss. You don't really believe that what they're doing is beneficial to the company or to your area or expertise, and your relationship is really negative. If they just ask you to go to the HR person and fax this paper for them, that feels like the most mundane, like that feels like the worst task you could possibly do, because you don't want to do anything to advance that person because your relationship is so negative with them. And so if you look at it that way, and you look at how we raise our kids, that's sometimes what ends up happening, that when our kids and us are having a positive relationship, and positive doesn't always mean nice and kissing butt and permissive, but it just means positive, our kids and ourselves as parents, we're more likely to do things for each other without it being feeling like we're pulling teeth. However, when things have happened in our relationship to rupture that or to disconnect us, mundane tasks feel really hard, and they feel really tough. You know, if that makes sense, if that analogy makes sense to what we're talking about.
Yeah, and I think it makes perfect sense, because you have a situation to where if your child respects you, then there's much greater possibility that they're going to listen to what it is that you say. On the other hand, if you have lost that respect, you know, now you have a situation to where rather than just doing whatever it is that you have asked, now there's the rolling of the eyes or whatever it is, mm-hmm. because you've mm-hmm. lost that respect. And I completely agree. It's the same thing at work. If they've lost the respect of their manager or whatever, then yes, it's going to be much more difficult for them with any a positive approach to do the things necessary, either in work or in home.
Right, exactly. And I really, you know, again, I go back to that idea of empowering parents, because a lot of parents, when we start to work together, the reason why they've called me, the reason why I'm working with them, is because some of that trust, that relationship, that respect has been lost somewhere along the line. And what I do is I create a really safe space for both the kid or kids and the parents to talk about what that might have looked like, what that might have looked like when we began to lose respect for each other, what might have happened when the parent began to see their kid as the adversary, or the kid began to resent their parent for whatever reason. When you go back to those moments, you begin to see, okay, you know, this is where the kids started saying, I don't respect my parent anymore because of whatever happened. You know, there was a divorce in the family. There was something that happened. We moved, or the parent made a decision the kid didn't agree with, or whatever. But when you begin to unpack that, things actually begin to change in families because now everyone is playing on the same field. You know, before the kid was playing in the bleachers and the parent was playing in the locker room, right? But now yeah. everyone's on the field together saying, oh, I get it. My kid doesn't respect me because I divorced their dad a year ago. Got it. Or, you know, my mom, you know, resents me because last year they caught me with weed in my backpack. Got it. Okay. You know, like everyone is starting to realize where it's coming from. It's no longer just about the surface behaviors we're seeing day to day. It's about these bigger concepts of I get where there was a break. I get where there was a rupture. And now we can repair it by talking about it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Now, for everybody out there, yeah, we are talking about the parenting skills. And Mercedes has some events coming up. And what I'd like to do, rather than cut to the West Shield commercial, I'd like to go ahead and ask everybody, you know what, open up another window on your computer. For those of you that are just sitting at your computer, obviously, if you're driving, don't do this. But, you know, open up another window and go to theparentingskill.com. If you just go to theparentingskill.com, you can pull up a separate window. Obviously, you can still listen to us, but you can kind of follow along and you can see some of the things that Mercedes is doing, as well as learning about some of the upcoming events. And so, Mercedes, share with us some of the things that are coming up where some of the parents can either tune in or they can go and meet directly with you and learn a little bit more about how they can discover their own unique parenting powers.
Right. Thank you so much for giving me that opportunity. So this weekend, actually, in Huntington Beach, March 5th and 6th, I am doing a two-day parenting intensive workshop. And what the title of that workshop is called Discover Your Unique Parenting Powers. And what I'm doing in that workshop is I'm taking my whole 8-week, 10-week curriculum that I use to work with parents one-on-one as well as in parenting groups, and I'm condensing it into 2 days where we really get into what it means to figure out what your unique parenting powers are, understand how to execute and use them in your life, as well as figure out what's going on for my kid. We'll be talking about child development. We'll be talking about brain development. We'll also be talking about some of the things we talked about in this interview, which is how to set effective limits that actually work, how to build a healthy relationship with my kids so that way I can place healthy limits on top of that, as well as what to do when there have been breaks or ruptures in our relationship. How do I get us back on track? So again, this is a 2-day intensive that is this weekend, March 5th and 6th, from 10 to 4 on each day. So you can get that. You can get the tickets. I don't know if you have the link up there, but the tickets are on Eventbrite, and you can get the tickets starting now.
Okay. So again, so you can go to Eventbrite, or if they go to your website, there'll be a link as mm-hmm. well. Okay.
Yes.
So,
yes.
And we'll have that information also on our website, which is the answersforthefamily.com website. And the location, which I thought was interesting because I've always heard of, you know, a guy that has a man cave, but the location is at the Girl Cave. Okay.
Yes.
So it's at the Girl Cave on Beach Boulevard in Huntington Beach.
Yes.
So, again, I strongly recommend that if anybody gets the opportunity, if you're in Southern California, check it out. I think it'll be well worthwhile.
Yes. Thank you.
All right. And so we have other listener questions. Or this one I think is more of a comment. This one says, I am an educational consultant who so agrees with your approach. I enjoyed reading your site and feel that our joint professions need a fresh, up close and personal approach with families. I'm adding your name to my list of resources. Thanks for all your great work. And this one's signed LP in Pasadena. So I think that's great. And again, and I appreciate the fact that, you know, some of you that receive our press release and you may not be able to listen to the show live, you know, that you take the time to send us a question or a comment or, you know, on the press release, click directly through and go to the website and see if this is something that works for you. So again, thank you for that comment and thank you for taking the time to share.
Yes. Yeah, thank you so much. That was a great comment. Thank you. I feel the same way. Thank you.
All right. And we have another question that has come in. And this one reads, as a divorced parent of three children, ages 8 to 13, how do I get my ex on the same page as to how to set boundaries for our children? She appears to be more concerned with being their best friend than making the tough decisions as a parent. I'm sure you've heard this one before.
Yes. Yes, I have. And I hear it with divorced couples. I hear it with co-parenting couples. And I hear it with families who are living in the exact same household. What happens when we have differing parenting styles? And so what I'll say is, because I don't know everything about your situation that was just shared, but one of the things that I always help my parents learn how to do is to find the strengths and the weaknesses in their co-parent's parenting style. Because every single parenting style, whether it be very strict or very lenient, has strengths and weaknesses. So when we begin to look at our co-parents, whoever it is, whether it be our ex or, you know, the person that we just had a child with or whatnot, to really look at, if this person is a little bit more lenient than I am, how can that be a strength for helping our children to develop healthy relationships with each other? But also, how can that sometimes be a weakness, and how we can actually bolster that, I can bolster that weakness with some of my more structured parenting. And then that makes a lot of sense, right? So in that person's weakness, I can say, okay, well, I'm really good at setting structure, but they're really good at being able to let the kids be themselves and develop that relationship. Also, one of the things you can do is look at sometimes how so much structure can keep our kids from having a voice and helping our kids really, you know, explore what it means. So there's that other piece that of that two sides to every coin, there's that other piece to what it means to be a more structured or strict parent. So in that instance, not to see each other as adversaries on the opposite sides of parenting, but to see each other as actually we are two sides of one coin. One parent has the strength of being open and a little bit more lenient and not so strict, and the other parent can actually set some of the limits that would be really healthy for everybody in the family. I think the issue becomes then, how do we as a parenting unit, whether we're still in a romantic relationship or not, how do we convey that? And that is something that if I was working with this parent, I would say it would be something that I would work with both of them to understand that you guys have to learn how to communicate in a way that's not adversarial and that's not resentful, but say as parents, right? Not as a couple, but as parents, how can we begin to communicate in a healthy way? We can, when you set a limit bad, let me know. Send me a text saying the limit has been this. That way I can begin to reinforce it. But when I say, I don't want that limit to be this, can we negotiate it? Dad then being able to say, you know what, we can negotiate the limit. Let me tell you more about why I created it. And then you can let me know what you want to do when they're with you. And again, there's that idea of back and forth. There's that idea of negotiation. There's that idea of being collaborative as opposed to adversarial, or as opposed to one person getting their way versus the other. This idea that we can collaborate on what might be the healthy limit for this moment. We can collaborate on whether or not that limit needs to be set now, or can it be set later? Is it something that we both need to set? How do we both reinforce it? And at the same time, listening to each other. So when the other parent says, hey, you know, this is the limit I've set, and I think this is going to be healthy for them this way. Not to see it, oh, that's so lenient, that's too nice, but to say, you know what, let me take a look at it. Let me see if this fits. Let me see if this makes sense for what, you know, what the issue was or what the behavior was. And again, I think the overarching idea is collaboration. How can we collaborate? How can we negotiate? How can we communicate in a way that we present ourselves as a parenting unit as opposed to two disparate parts?
Yeah, and I completely agree. And what I also hear you saying is that's putting the child first. In other words, yeah. if they can just agree to put the child first, because I think in many cases they need to look at, why do you feel like you have to be either more lenient or more strict? Why do you feel like that? Are you the person being more strict? Are you being more strict because you feel like you have to balance out the level of leniency, or would you be more apt to compromise if the other would compromise as well? You know, on the other hand, when you take the person who is being, say, much, much more lenient and letting them go do things, I think to be able to sit down and talk about maybe some of the dangers, you know, okay, you're letting the child drive the car till 2 o'clock in the morning without knowing where they're at. Let's talk about putting the child first, and not that it's my idea or your idea, but what is the safest situation that we can have for our child?
Right.
You know, and are we doing this because we just want to be their friend and we want them to like us and we don't want them to say, well, if you don't let me do this, I'm going to go live with fill in the blank.
Right. So I think also being honest about that stuff too, like I think it is, you know, we forget that parents are human too. So, you know, when our kids say we don't like you and we have our own emotional ties and values to that or weight to that, it can feel hard to set those limits. And I think if you know that as the other parent, that this parent has their own emotional baggage around rejection or approval, to understand that that also informs why they may be more lenient. So if that parent really likes to be approved and that parent has their own personal needs of being approved and liked, really helping them to understand what their role as a parent is as opposed to what their personal life or their personal experience has taught them. And I think that that, again, goes back to that collaborative idea of putting the kid first and saying, you know, your own life has taught you this. However, as a parenting unit, we have a role to do X for this child. And let's look at that first before we bring in our own personal stuff, or our own childhood stuff, if that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense. And as we're starting to wind down a little bit with time, one of the things that I love on this show is to have success stories. So if in the 3 minutes or so that we still have left, I would love if you could share one of your favorite success stories that will resonate to everybody out there, that no matter what it is that you're going through now, there is a way to turn that into a great success story where your family is operating out of love.
Yes. I had a family that I worked with. And the young man, you know, had a lot of anger. He was, you know, very upset, didn't really know how to deal with his emotional intensity. And he's a teenager. And when we began to work, the parents also did not know how to help their child through his emotional intensity. And it always kind of manifested itself as anger and physicality. So we began to work through things, and some of the points that I talked about here about, you know, really figuring out when this became an issue for him, really figuring out what his relationship was with his parents, and really figuring out what his relationship was to his own anger and his own life experience, we began to unpack and uncover what he felt, which is he didn't feel very safe. He didn't feel very trusting in his home or in his space. And as we began to set that up for him, as well as I began to help the parents learn how to be that safe space for him, he began to open up more and to share about his anger and to share about what was going on for him. And even though it took a while for him to get safe with his parents, they got to a place where what I shared earlier was them having tools to deal with it, right? They got to a place where when he did have his anger outburst, when he was having a hard time that week managing his anger, they felt equipped and strong enough and empowered enough to be there for him and connect with him and say, hey, we see your anger and we're not going to punish you. We're not going to, you know, take everything away because we know now that you sometimes have a hard time with your anger. So we're here with you and we're going to help you work through it. What do you need? Do you need to go outside and punch something? Do you need to go for a run? What do you need? So that way you can kind of manage that anger in a healthy way, and then you can come back into the situation and then we can problem solve. And seeing that family go from not knowing what to do, kid being out of control, parents feeling scared for their child, to the parent telling me, Mercedes, I now know how to help my child when he is going to get angry or when he's getting angry. That's the outcome and the success that I want to see in families, not an eradication of behaviors, but for parents to feel confident that they can help their kid through those behaviors.
I love it. And so for everybody out there, you heard it. There are ways to be able to take whatever the situation is, and through communication and through love, to be able to bring somebody in that can help you work with your family. So again, Mercedes, mm-hmm. thank you so much for everything that you do. Again, yes. for everybody out there, you know, again, if you want to learn more, you can go to theparentingskill.com to get more information, either on the next workshop or all the other things that Mercedes is doing. So again, Mercedes, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
All right. And for everybody out there, please tune in next week when our guest, Will White, author of Stories from the Field, A History of Wilderness Therapy, joins us again. And believe me, Will has been with us before, just has an incredible amount of knowledge of wilderness therapy and of teenagers in general. So again, it will be a show that you won't want to miss. But if you did miss a show or you want to share our show with your friends, please visit our archives of past interviews at answersforthefamily.com, or you can subscribe to the show for free on iTunes. And the next time you're on Facebook or Twitter, please remember to stop by our page and like us. Now, if you have any questions, if you're thinking of something, if you'd like to ask Mercedes, or if you have questions for me, feel free to send your questions in. We will try to get them answered on the air. Even if it's on another subject, we're going to try to be able to answer whatever your questions are. We've had a few people that have sent questions in that have said, you know, I heard your show 3 weeks ago and I had this thought, but I didn't know when to send it in or how to send it in because it wasn't really consistent with the most recent show. Don't worry about it. Send your questions in. We will do everything we can to get them answered, either by getting them back to the professional that you were asking, or if it's a question for us, we'll do the best we can. So for everybody out there, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers for the Family.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.